Welcome in, Outkick Podcast listeners, breaking down Game 7s, two of them yesterday in the NBA, and lots of good stuff coming your way, including Alex Marvez and David Robinson. This is the regular edition of the show. If you want the Game of Thrones discussion, that will be on the best of. But for the rest of the discussion surrounding the world of sports, this is Outkick the Coverage. Dial in and jump in now. Hope your week is going well.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. It is Monday morning. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us here on Outkick. Yesterday was Mother's Day. We had a double Game 7. We had the next to last episode of Game of Thrones. It was a fun, hopefully for you, really exciting Sunday that culminated in two really good Game 7s. Now, before we get to the Game 7s, I was stunned that the Golden State Warriors won Game 6 like they did over the Houston Rockets. I think this was an epic, we are still the Golden State Warrior dynasty, watch out, win for Klay Thompson, for Steph Curry. For Steph Curry to come back after going scoreless in the first half and put up 33 in the second half was phenomenal. For him to take control of that game down the stretch like he did, even with what has been a very wobbly postseason so far from Steph Curry, to step up in the absence of Kevin Durant. And don't mistake what's going on either with all the postgame interviews, with all of the quotes that are being given. The Golden State Warriors are trying to convince Kevin Durant to stay with them. Potentially going to win a third straight title with him. I believe the Golden State Warriors will. I think they'll beat the Portland Trailblazers. I think they'll beat the Bucks or the Raptors, whoever emerges from the Eastern Conference, and win a third straight title, a fourth title in 5 years. I really do. And if you notice the way that all the Warriors responded after they beat the Rockets, so much of it was about giving credit to Kevin Durant and how good he is, even though he wasn't playing. The Warriors are trying to woo Kevin Durant back to maintain his relationship with their team and try to keep their dynasty going on. If you're not paying attention to that aspect of this story, start to listen to the interviews with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. All of the top Warriors are trying to make it clear that Kevin Durant is the best player on the team, that they need him, that they want him, even though they went out and won a massive game against the Rockets without him. And if you are a Rockets fan, after all the whining last season, oh, we lost in Game 7. There's no way we would have lost if Chris Paul had stayed healthy. You missed 27 straight threes in Game 7 at home. You whine about all the officiating. You had a win set up on a golden platter for you. All you had to do was beat the Warriors without Kevin Durant at home, and you force a Game 7, put all the pressure squarely on the Golden State Warriors. Instead, you got run at home. Your team shrunk in the moment. If you couldn't do it this year, I think there's legitimate questions about whether the duo of Chris Paul and James Harden is ever going to be able to do it. I really do. And so that is a major story that came out of Friday night's NBA action. And I got to be honest with you, I was totally wrong. I felt like the Rockets were as close to a guarantee as you could possibly get at home. Maybe not to cover, because covering the 7-point line I thought was going to be tough. Still thought they would probably do it. But I thought there was no way they would allow the Warriors to beat them in Houston to end their season. I was wrong. Props to the Warriors on a wild win that I think got their third title in a row, fourth in the last 5 years. pretty much sewn up, because I think the Rockets were the best team remaining in the NBA playoffs. But the best game that happened yesterday, and look, neither one of these games were great. A lot of missed shots, a lot of poor play. Seemed like the moment was too big for most of the players on the court. The possible exception of CJ McCollum, who played out of his mind. There was nobody else that I saw that really kind of elevated their game to a different level in Game 7. But if you haven't heard the audio or seen the video of the way Kawhi Leonard shot the Raptors into the Eastern Conference Finals, here is what it sounded like last night on TNT.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Four bounces into the rim, one of the wildest, softest shots I've ever seen on the rim. The reactions from Toronto were incredible. The only thing that could have made that more brutal if you're a 76ers fan would have been if you'd been up 1 point and that had been a three-pointer to not only win the series, but also to beat you, and as opposed to a tie game that would have, if it hadn't gone to overtime. Wild, wild ending in Toronto. Just absolutely incredible shot by Kawhi Leonard. On a larger scale, the question I think now, if you are an NBA fan, is does the way that series went and the way Kawhi has advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals make it more difficult for him to walk away from Toronto? If Toronto were able to beat the Bucks, and I don't think they will, I think the Bucks will win this series. If the Bucks were able to win this series, I think there's a legitimate question about whether or not Kawhi will leave. If the Raptors win and they go to the NBA Finals, I think it gets a little bit harder for Kawhi to leave even more so. So the story within the story is, yes, the Raptors advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, but in the process, are they tying themselves even more concretely to the relationship with Toronto and Kawhi? I don't know, but that's certainly something worth paying attention to there. In the other game, the Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trail Blazers, I feel like both these teams do not and have not received a lot of respect all season long. And so for CJ McCollum to come out and play as well as he did to make the shots, I think he finished with 37 points. Lillard did not shoot well. Jamal Murray did not shoot well. There were a lot of ugly performances from a shooting perspective in that Trailblazers and Denver Nuggets game. But Portland back to the Western Conference Finals for the first time since 2000. It has been a very, very long time since the Trailblazers were in this position. Now the question is, do they have the horses to be able to keep up with Golden State, even with Golden State potentially not having Kevin Durant for a little while? We'll see. We don't know how long Kevin Durant is going to be out. I think a lot of that will be determined by how Golden State comes out and plays in Game 1 and Game 2 in Oracle. Because if Golden State goes out and wins Game 1 and Game 2, I don't think there's any way you rush Kevin Durant back on the road in Portland. He didn't even make the trip to Houston. So I think they'll leave Kevin Durant out, particularly if Golden State takes control of this series and wins the first couple at home. Maybe he comes back for Game 5. Maybe not. If Golden State's up 3-1 coming back for Game 5, for instance, or certainly if the series is over, but if they're up 3-1, I don't think they bring Kevin Durant back. I think there's a decent chance Durant does not play at all against Portland, and the Warriors are trying to get him ready for the NBA Finals. Now, it could be that the Warriors don't even really need Durant at all in this series against the Trailblazers, but we'll see. I mean, whether or not the Trailblazers can win one of the games in Golden State this week will, I think, go a long way towards determining how competitive this series will be overall. But without Kevin Durant, maybe, just maybe, the Warriors are a little bit more gettable than they were just a couple of weeks ago. Now, The big difference is, and this is what a lot of you probably certainly were raining down on my Twitter mentions after this game, this is still the same core and nucleus of the Golden State Warrior team that went 73-9 without Kevin Durant. And I think there was an element, and still is an element, of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry that enjoy reminding everybody just how good they can be without having Kevin Durant to defer to, without having another scorer. DeMarcus Cousins is out. This is like an old-school rerun, Splash Brothers Part 2, long after we forgot about how good this team was. Now, there certainly have been changes to the team, and the overall bench is nowhere near as talented as that 73-9 team was. But when Steph and Klay get rolling, they can be incredibly difficult to beat, and the importance of their defense becomes even more paramount, and I thought that was the underrated aspect of their win on the road against the Rockets. Late in that game, remember, with about 10 minutes to go, there was a possession where the Rockets had the ball up 7. They were up 7, got a steal, came back down. They were in a 3-on-1. And everybody ran to the three-point line instead of going to the basket to score and go up 9. They end up missing a shot in the lane. And from that moment, basically, the Houston Rockets season became on the brink as the Warriors came surging back and put themselves into position to win this game and win this series. It was an extraordinary game to watch. As we roll now into the Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals, we'll break down what we expect to see in these games. Now, we'll also do Hour 2, breaking down Game of Thrones, which I thought was the best Game of Thrones episode so far that we've seen. Only one episode remains now for Game of Thrones. The series will end forever on Sunday. And we're going to talk with both David Robinson and Alex Marvez in Hour 3. So that is where we are headed.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Klay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Tim Brando has a phrase that he's coined in many of his games that he's called over the years, saying the iron unkind. It's interesting to think about if you are a Philadelphia fan. You won a playoff game against the Chicago Bears with an improbable lucky bounce on that field goal, if you remember. The double doink field goal miss that put Philadelphia into the game in the divisional round, I guess it was, against the New Orleans Saints. And now the iron was kind to you there, and here the iron was very unkind with Kawhi Leonard's game-winning jumper to win Game 7. I believe they said that is the only, you guys may know better than me, and we'll go to the crew here in a minute, but I believe that's the only final shot at the buzzer Game 7 win in NBA history, I think they said. Now, final shot, because people are going to be like, well, there's other shots that have won games. But I mean, as the clock expires, buzzer beater literally, if it goes, it's a win. If it misses, it doesn't. I don't think any other Game 7 in the history of the NBA has ever come down to that being a literal buzzer beater, where it's the final shot of the game and you're waiting to see whether or not a team wins or loses based on that shot dropping. Here is what was said after the game. We'll start with Joel Embiid, who was crushed. He was in defense on this shot. There's an incredible shot of Kawhi Leonard. There was so much time as we waited to see whether or not this shot was going to drop or not, with Embiid standing there rooting against it while Kawhi was trying to body language it in. Here is what Joel Embiid had to say after the game.
I don't know. I don't know. Game 7, losing a game that way, last shot after a hard-fought game. I feel like we had a chance. A lot of things go through your mind, and it sucks. I don't know. I can't explain it. It just sucks.
And on the opposite side of the emotional spectrum, Kawhi Leonard was asked about it, and he had this to say.
I knew it was Game 7, and I didn't want to leave no shots in my mind. I just wanted to go out and leave it all on the floor. This could have been my last game for the season. And, you know, I would have had to wait four months to put another shot up in a game. So I was going to leave it all out on the floor tonight and not worry about makes or misses and still just, you know, try to will us to a win or just get to my spots.
Sounds like an evil assassin. Kawhi Leonard very calm after that shot drops to put Toronto on to the Eastern Conference Finals. All right, so now we are set. The Final Four in the NBA underway officially starting tomorrow, I believe. You got the Golden State Warriors hosting the Portland Trail Blazers, and you got the Milwaukee Bucks hosting the Toronto Raptors. I think we are headed for a Warriors-Bucks final. I would be surprised, honestly, based on how we have seen the Bucks play. They are 8-1 so far in the postseason. If the Raptors can take this series to seven, maybe even a little bit surprised if they take it to six. But right now, I would probably say Bucks 4-2 in a six-game series win over the Raptors. In the other side of the equation, I'm going to go 4-2 with the Warriors just because they won 4-2 over the Clippers and they won 4-2 over the Rockets. I think the Trailblazers will come out and win a couple of games, maybe even both at home after they go down 0-2. But I think the Warriors will find a way to win this series relatively easily, and I would expect to see Warriors-Bucks in the finals of the NBA. I think right now, if you are the NBA, you are desperately rooting for that to be the series. Worst case scenario for the NBA in terms of interest, although this would be an intriguing matchup, would be if they got Trailblazers-Raptors. It would be an insanely low-rated NBA Finals that would probably have ESPN and TNT executives curled up in the fetal position crying. But I think the most likely outcome is the Warriors-Bucks. And I still think the Warriors are going to win the title. I've said this all along. Whoever won the Warriors-Rockets series, I felt like would win the NBA Finals. We'll see how long Kevin Durant is out. That's obviously a bit of drama we didn't necessarily anticipate. But he is going to have a decent amount of time to recover. Even by the time they play game one in this series, he will have had almost 6 days to recover, almost six full days to recover for Kevin Durant by the time game one in this series is played. By the time we get into the weekend, again, I think the Warriors probably, if they could win game one on Tuesday and game two, I believe it is on Thursday, would probably be ecstatic if they don't have to play him at all in this series. And if they go up 2-0 with two wins at home, I think the odds of them needing to play him probably diminish pretty substantially. So that's where we are. The NBA Finals now set. I want to bring in the crew, and I'll start with you, Danny G. Were you watching the Raptors live or Game of Thrones live when Kawhi hit his shot?
Clay, I made the executive decision to keep the close Game 7 on and then wait an hour and a half afterwards to watch the West Coast feed of Game of Thrones. So I did not miss Kawhi Leonard's last second shot.
I missed the shot live. I
figured you did.
My phone blew. I mean, I do an immediate live reaction show, which tens of thousands of people watch on Periscope and Facebook. And I've got to write my article on Game of Thrones. There's no doubt for my audience, there was way more interest in game in episode 5 of Game of Thrones than there was in Game 7 between the Raptors and the 76ers. Now, I watched the seventh game between the Nuggets and the Trailblazers, and I would have watched the Raptors game if it had not been going head to head. I guess I watched till there was about 10 minutes left, and then I flipped it over to watch Game of Thrones. So I was not watching live. My phone blew up because Rachel Bonetta, who is on the Lock It In show with me, is a huge Raptors fan, and she was ecstatically texting about that win. So I knew what had happened because my phone blew up, but I was not watching it live. Can you? And then let me go ahead now. I'll go around the horn. Yeah. Dub, which one were you watching live?
I was watching Game of Thrones live, and I got about 5 or 6 text messages from people that all said the same thing, holy bleep. So I kind of figured what had happened. with some drama at the end late in the Toronto Raptors game.
Yeah, I didn't see the Kawhi shot until after my Game of Thrones reaction show when I sat down to start writing my Game of Thrones column. I happened to click on social media then and see the improbable Kawhi Leonard game winner shot, but I didn't see it for a couple of hours after it actually happened. What about you, Eddie Garcia? You're not watching. What about you, Roberto? Were you watching Game of Thrones live or Game 7?
Game of Thrones, because I needed to go to sleep, so I'm going to watch Game of Thrones. I don't want Clay and the guys to spoil it for me, so
yeah.
I had to watch Game of Thrones.
All right, so let's go into the show. Well, first of all, let's bring in Eddie Garcia. And Eddie, while we're here, let's get the update on what's going on in the NHL. We got the Eastern and the Western Conference Finals going on in the NHL. I know there's a bunch of NHL fans out there listening right now. Give us the update. You are the resident expert in the world of hockey.
Well, we've got, obviously, the conference finals going on. Game 2 between the Blues and Sharks is coming up tonight in San Jose, with San Jose holding the 1-0 series lead. And we've had two games in the Eastern Conference Finals, and so far it has been very decisive for the Boston Bruins. Two very easy wins over the Carolina Hurricanes, who, maybe the Cinderella slipper has fallen off. We'll see. Game 3 in Raleigh will obviously be huge for them, but so far the first two games in the East, it's been all Boston.
And so far, and I've watched just a few minutes of both of these series, all three of the games that have been played so far, the two in the Eastern Conference and the one in the Western Conference, not really that close, right? I mean, we've gotten pretty solid offensive beatdowns by the San Jose Sharks and the Boston Bruins in every game. I know game one with the Hurricanes and the Bruins was close until the third period, but ultimately it hasn't been that exciting of a series so far.
Correct. You are correct on both counts.
All right. So were you watching game seven live when Kawhi dropped in his shot last
night? I was. Yes, I was. You know, I don't have HBO, and I'm planning on binge watching Game of Thrones at some point, but I did see Kawhi's shot, yes.
All right. I want to ask the question. Is that the wildest game winner you have ever seen? Can you remember a game-winning buzzer-beater shot that was crazier than the Kawhi win? To have the ball hit the rim that many times and then go in. And there have been a lot of shots that have taken tours of the rim like I would say Kawhi's has. But can you remember a bigger shot than that that has gone in that manner, right? That kind of bounced around on the rim and then went in. The most recent one for me that I can remember was not quite a buzzer beater, but it was, I mean, because it just like my heart got yanked out while it was still beating, like Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom style, was not this year, but last year, Mount St. Mary's beat Tennessee on a shot with like 4 seconds left or something like that. Where the guy pulled up and it hit the rim like three or four different times before it dropped in. And that one went off the rim, off the backboard, and ended up dropping. And why it was so crushing on top of it. The only thing you can say about the Kawhi shot is at least the 76ers weren't up like 1 point or weren't up 2 points, and that wasn't a three. But to lose, if you had had the win in your hands, and that one was the way Tennessee lost. I think that Tennessee was up one, and then that ball took the tour of the rim and dropped, and Mount St. Mary's ended up winning by one. Now, Tennessee had time to come back down and miss a shot the other direction, but that to me was maybe the most crushing defeat that I've ever seen in basketball, and that was another one where the ball took a tour of the rim before it decided to drop in a NCAA tournament scenario where it's winner takes all, which is basically the equivalent of a game seven in every single game. Can you guys remember a shot as improbable as the Kawhi shot that hit the rim that many times in a scenario like that? Because I really, and you can reach out to me, by the way, on Twitter at Clay Travis, for a buzzer beater, it's rare, first of all, that you get a shot that goes around the rim like that. It's rare that it would happen at any point in an NBA game or a college basketball game. But to have it happen in that scenario, it's almost like a movie ending. Like I said, the only way it could have been different and more debilitating for the 76ers would have been if they were up 1 point in that scenario. So I'll open up the floor for anybody on the show. Anybody got a good nominee for a shot similar or even more remarkable than the Kawhi win?
Does it have to be a game seven?
It has to be, I mean, if you got, it has to be a, you know, I mean, I think the significance of the shot, to me, it almost needs to be an NCAA tournament game or a game seven because you literally can't come back from it. It's the last made basket of the entire series or the entire game. And again, the one I think of other than this one is the Mount St. Mary shot last year against Tennessee to win the game was a tour of the rim, what I would call a tour of the rim, right? It banks, it's bouncing, it's off the wall, off the backboards, off the rim. Like there, it's not like it's a clean swish. And that wasn't even, there was like 3 or 4 seconds left. It was the final made basket. But these are so rare. Again, I think the stat is this hasn't happened in a game seven in the NBA before, much less in improbable fashion. But what do you have that you're thinking of, Danny G? I mean, Eddie Garcia.
Well, the only thing that I was thinking of because of how many times it hit the rim was like in 86, and maybe Danny will remember this, or Roberto, Lakers Rockets when Ralph Sampson, with 1 second left, just kind of caught it and shot put it up. It wasn't even a real shot. He just threw it up there, and it hit off the rim a couple of times and fell. That was a game five, though. It was not a game seven.
Yeah. I mean, obviously still massive if it happened. And look, there have been a lot of big shots in different series that have been, you know, hugely massive. But a lot of those are just drained jumpers, right? I mean, you think about Ray Allen for three in winning LeBron the second Heat title. I mean, there are a ton of big shots we can go to. But in that scenario, in that situation, I can't even think of them. Now, you can hop out if anybody else got one that comes to mind, because you can reach out to me on Twitter at Clay Travis and let me know. We'll come back and continue to unpack this improbable and incredible win for the Rockets. We'll also think a little bit about what we anticipate going forward now in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals of the NBA. Start to break that down for you a little bit. In hour two, our Game of Thrones reaction. I know a lot of people watching Game of Thrones out there last night, the most watched by far television viewing event of the night. And in hour three, we have got David Robinson and we have got Alex Marvez, both a lot of fun coming in hour three. That is where we are headed. Appreciate you spending your Monday morning with us here on OutKick. This is Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back, Geico OutKick Studios. That is the Kawhi Leonard game-winning shot in Mandarin. Evidently, it was Loyola of Chicago instead of Mount St. Mary's. Whatever. It was a school that never matters, usually, and then they get hot in the NCAA tournament. So Loyola of Chicago made the shot. The important thing is not the team that did it, it's the shot that was made. I'm getting old. Every now and then I'm going to be wrong on the team. Everybody knew what I was talking about, so deal with it. That is the shot that I'm talking about. It's the only one I can really kind of think of. Several people hitting me with the Jim Valvano, the NC State team that won on the basket that was attempted, that was short, that was caught and dunked against Houston and won NC State the title. That's a pretty wild way to end the NCAA tournament. There's certainly the big shot that that we have seen over the years in the NCAA tournament are all the equivalent of big shots. Because every NCAA tournament game is the equivalent of a game seven. It's all that matters. You don't get the opportunity to come back. In the NBA, I think that's as improbable and as big of a shot as we have seen, given the stakes. Again, I think somebody can back me up on this. I think the report is there's never been a buzzer beater in a game seven before in the history of the NBA.
Now, yeah, you're right. Ernie Johnson reported that, and the other guys on the crew were like, are you sure? Because that, like what you were saying earlier, they were confused with game-winning shots, but that was the first buzzer beater in Game 7 history.
Yeah, right. And inevitably, whenever you say that, your phone, you know, like on social media or whatever, blows up because people name a bunch of big game-winning shots.
Yeah.
But buzzer beater is different than a game winner. It is there's no time left on the clock when the shot goes through the net. And so for Kawhi, the double, triple, maybe quadruple bounce before it actually went through is you literally never happened before in the history of the NBA. Not to mention, it's never happened before that we've had a buzzer beater game winner like that in NBA history, much less a shot that took a tour of the rim like that one did and we had so much time to wait and see whether it was going to drop or whether or not there was going to be the overtime. Again, the only way there could have been more drama in that shot was if it was for the win. If the Sixers had been up 1 point, or if it had been a couple of steps back and had been a three-pointer, and the Sixers had been up one in that way. That's the only way I can think of where there could have been more drama and more at stake there, where it's made or missed based on whether or not the team is going to advance. It's just, I mean, it's something that has never happened before in the history of the NBA, and I do think it could have a larger significance in that it could impact Kawhi Leonard on whether or not he decides to end up leaving Toronto. Because I think if that shot doesn't drop and then the Raptors lose Game 7 to the Sixers, that's a crushing loss. Kawhi Leonard's an unrestricted free agent. He's going to have a lot of time to sit around and think about his decision. I think it becomes much more likely that he will stay in Toronto based on making that shot, because now it gives the Raptors a chance to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals and potentially advance to the NBA Finals. And if Kawhi is being rational and he really cares about winning a championship, now maybe he doesn't because he's already won championships with the Spurs and he doesn't necessarily need to sit around and worry about whether his career is going to be complete. Maybe he just wants to go somewhere and live and be as happy and comfortable as he can, given the fact that he's from Southern California. Maybe he's going to go to the Clippers no matter what. And maybe there's not going to be any long-range impact from whether or not he made that jumper. But if the Clippers, I mean, if he's got to sit back and think in his head, okay, let's see how all of these different other talented players move around. And let's say, for instance, that Kevin Durant decided to stay at Golden State. Would it really make sense for Kawhi to go to the Western Conference then if he could otherwise stay in the Eastern Conference and be a lot more competitive potentially? Let's say that Kyrie Irving leaves the Celtics and the overall quality of the Celtics declines. I think there's a lot of moving parts here that Kawhi would be smart to consider before he leaves. But I think certainly if you're a Raptors fan, there's a huge chance that that basket has drastically improved not just your chances to win a championship this year, but also your chances to potentially keep Kawhi Leonard, because you just get an opportunity to make the case to him even more. Okay, let's go see what happens in this series now against the Bucks. I am curious who people out there are going to root for, because we put up the poll before Game 6 of the series against the Rockets, and near 2 out of 3 of my audience was rooting for the Rockets to beat the Warriors. Well, I don't feel like there's that much of a national fan base for the Portland Trailblazers, the Milwaukee Bucks, or the Toronto Raptors. National fan base in the United States. Obviously, Canada is a national fan base for the Raptors since they're the only basketball team now north of the border, with the Vancouver having left for Memphis a decade or so ago, however long ago that was now. But you look at those three teams, and most people don't really know very much about them compared to the Warriors, who everybody knows very, very well. Who do you think people will be rooting for? Talk about that to start off hour three. I'm going to put up a poll question for that at the end of hour one here. But I want to bring in the crew. Let's get some early picks on what we anticipate ending up happening. Is anybody willing to bet on anything other than Warriors-Bucks? I've said I think Bucks in six, Warriors in six. I think it will be Warriors going up against the Milwaukee Bucks. Anybody on the show have a strong opinion for anybody else advancing to the finals?
Yeah, I think pretty much the whole crew is going to be in line with that. I mean, I picked the Bucks before the postseason began, so I'm definitely going to stay with the Bucks. I do think the Trailblazers will give the Warriors a little bit more trouble than what people are anticipating, though.
Maybe because Kevin Durant's out, but in general, yeah. They just don't
plus
have
their bench. I mean, it used to be just Lillard or CJ, and they would take turns. Now, their bench, like yesterday, was incredible. Zach Collins, Mo Harkless, Evan Turner
came alive in the fourth, quarter.
Damian Lillard, he called Turner the MVP of the game. Suddenly, Portland has a bench to go along with those two stars.
I understand that, but I would be stunned if they were able to beat the Warriors and advance to the NBA Finals. And I am kind of curious, in general, how much interest there will be, because I think there are a lot of people out there who agree with me that effectively the NBA Finals was Rockets against Warriors, just like it was last year. Rockets, Warriors, I think it's fair to say whoever would have won that series would have won the NBA Finals. I think this year the only difference is we got it in the semifinals. So I think the number of people who actually have strong feelings one way or the other about the Portland Trailblazers, almost zero. A number of people who have strong feelings about the Milwaukee Bucks or the Toronto Raptors, almost zero. So we have got a series where 75% of the teams that are remaining in both the Eastern and the Western Conference just don't really provoke that much reaction. There's not a strong feeling one way or the other between the Raptors and the Bucks, and I'm curious to see how many people actually buy in and spend their time investing in these two series, because I think a lot of people believe, like I do, that the Warriors, even more so, are likely to go on and win this the championship. Now, the fact that Kevin Durant is out adds some drama to this series, but I don't think people know the Trailblazers. I don't think there's a strong rooting interest for them. I think there is a lot of fun if you've watched their series so far. The Lillard made three-pointer to score 50 and wave goodbye to Russell Westbrook and the OKC Thunder. The C.J. McCollum taking over Game 7 down the stretch on the road against the Nuggets. But does anybody out there really believe, outside of the most hardcore Portland Trailblazer fans, that there's any chance at all that the Trailblazers are going to pull off the upset over the Warriors? And does anybody outside of Milwaukee and Toronto really care about the Eastern Conference Finals at all? There's no LeBron. There's no Boston Celtics. I'm genuinely curious to see how much the reaction is going to be, and also who you guys are rooting for.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. About to roll into Hour 3, Monday edition. We're going to be joined by my guy, Alex Marvez. By the way, we'll talk a little bit of NFL. Did anybody else notice that Aaron Rodgers was in the episode last night of Game of Thrones?
No.
He had a very quick moment. He was one of the soldiers in the battle. If you're interested in that, you can just type it in on Twitter, Aaron Rodgers, Game of Thrones, and you'll be able to find the screenshot. But we'll talk with Alex Marvez about the NFL, start off Hour 3. Then we're going to be joined by the Admiral David Robinson live on the show in Hour 3. We'll ask him about the NBA playoffs, what he thinks of Greg Popovich's potential to continue with the Spurs, what he thought of Kawhi's shot, what he thinks of Kawhi in general. All of those topics and discussions coming in Hour 3. But we are here in the meantime in the Geico Outkick Studios. And I put up a poll question, which I think is an intriguing one. And already, almost 10,000 of you have voted in this thing so far. Who are you rooting for in the NBA now that we're down to four teams? The Warriors, the Trailblazers, the Bucks, and the Raptors underway. And I'm surprised. You never know exactly how these things are going to go. I thought the Bucks might win it because I think Giannis is becoming a really popular superstar. I think he's very well liked. Also, Milwaukee has never won a championship before, and I think kind of casual fans root for new teams. But I'm surprised by how much the Bucks are the favorite here. 47% of you. As we approach 10,000 votes this morning in the first hour with the poll up, you can go vote yourself at Clay Travis, 47% of you going with the Bucks, 22% of you rooting for the Trailblazers, 16% for the Warriors, only 15% rooting for the Raptors. So the Warriors and the Raptors, by far the least rooted for teams here. The Trailblazers, the favorite in the Western Conference among the Outkick crew, and the Bucks, the favorite for the Western Conference. Sorry, the Eastern Conference and the Outkick crew. So we will see how these numbers continue to evolve as much of the West Coast has not yet woken up. It's possible that the Warriors and the Trailblazers could end up with more votes, but right now the Milwaukee Bucks running away with our poll question on who people are rooting for. We are going to be joined by Alex Marvez to start off Hour 3, and then David Robinson, the Admiral, will join us live as well. All that and more on Outkick. This is Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, all 50 states, all over the globe. Appreciate you guys listening wherever you may be, on any of our 300-plus affiliate stations across the nation, on satellite radio, on Fox Sports Radio, the streaming device on the iHeartMedia app. Wherever you are, thanks for listening to us here on this Monday edition of the show. Hope you took care of your wives, your moms, your mothers out there across the nation on Mother's Day. We had two Game 7s that were going on. The Trailblazers behind C.J. McCollum come storming back from a 17-point deficit to win a Game 7 on the road against the Denver Nuggets. Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals will begin on Tuesday night in San Francisco, Oakland, the Bay Area. And Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals will begin in Milwaukee, where the Bucks have not won an NBA title since 1971. After the Raptors found a way to get a win, they will be the Bucks' opponent. What did it sound like? We had something that has never happened before in the history of the NBA, a legitimate buzzer beater. That is a shot that ends a Game 7 with a make. It was Kawhi Leonard. This is what it sounded like if you didn't hear it live.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
That was the reaction in Toronto as the Raptors get the win in Game 7 over the Sixers to advance now to play against the Milwaukee Bucks. On after the game, Joel Embiid had this to say.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Game 7, losing a game that way, you know, last shot. After a hard-fought game, I feel like we had a chance. You know, a lot of things go through your mind, and it sucks. I don't know. I can't explain it. It just sucks.
Embiid, and then Kawhi Leonard, who sounds like a serial killer assassin, he sounds almost the exact same as Joel Embiid. You would never know this guy just hit the biggest shot of his career.
I knew it was Game 7, and I didn't want to leave no shots in my mind. I just wanted to go out and leave it all on the floor. This could have been my last game for the season. And, you know, I would have had to wait four months to put another shot up in a game. So I was going to leave it all out on the floor tonight and not worry about makes or misses and still just, you know, try to will us to a win or just get to my spots.
First hour poll question, almost 10,000 of you have voted so far. Who are you rooting for in the NBA now that we're down to the final four? Warriors, Trailblazers, Bucks, or Raptors? The Bucks are running away with this. They haven't won a title since 1971, and maybe that's the reason why so many people are rooting for them. I also think a lot of you out there really like Giannis. 47% of the vote coming in on the Bucks. 22% on the Trailblazers, 16% for the Warriors, and 15% for the Raptors. So at least my audience rooting for a Bucks Trailblazers NBA Finals. That would send ESPN and NBA officials into the fetal position because that would be an incredibly low-rated Finals. But we'll see what ends up happening. The Warriors now carrying almost all of the rooting interest from a negative perspective or a positive perspective, because I don't think that many people have strong opinions about the Trailblazers, the Bucks, and the Raptors. But again, that series starts tomorrow. We'll be breaking it down a lot. But let's bring in Alex Marvez, who joins us every single Monday. The NFL always kind of looming. Alex, I know you don't watch Game of Thrones because for some reason you've sworn off television. But Aaron Rodgers hasn't said very much in the offseason. He did make a cameo last night. He was one of the soldiers in Game of Thrones.
I heard about this, you know, and maybe so we can shift the conversation away from the dysfunction, allegedly, of the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, that Bleacher Report story came out about 6-7 weeks ago where, you know, Aaron Rodgers wasn't cast in a very favorable light, his relationship with Mike McCarthy. And then last week, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Tom Silverstein, who's been covering this team for more than two decades, comes out firing, you know, with his claims of how more than 20 people he has spoken to inside and outside the organization are concerned about the way it's being run. because of a little bit of a shaky structure when it comes to football ops. There's no one person in charge of football ops. And you can joke, well, Aaron Rodgers is in charge of football ops. But no, no, no. The head coach, the general manager, and the director of football operations each have their niche, but apparently those responsibilities bleed into the other. For example, Tom claims that Matt LaFleur didn't have the opportunity to hire all of his own assistant coaches that he wanted to do.
That seems wild.
The general manager didn't have his final say on the head coach. It was Mark Murphy, the team president. And what Tom was referring to is the fact that as the dark days of the Green Bay Packers, pre-Brett Favre, this team was rudderless, didn't have a single person in charge of football ops. They're back to another triumvirate trying to run this team, and there's a lot of concern the Packers may be going back to a very dark time in franchise history.
Yeah, that's very strange in general. But at least they have the Milwaukee Bucks to maybe lead them to the promised land instead of the Green Bay Packers. That's how bad things have gotten.
Jack Sigma still playing? Clay, update me.
Since 1971. It's wild. It's not very often that in Wisconsin you can be like, okay, well, the Packers may stink, but at least we got the Bucks to keep us happy throughout the sporting calendar. All right, let's go in. I still think it's the biggest story. And I'm not sure there's a close second right now in the NFL offseason. It's Tyreek Hill. What is the latest, if anything, you're hearing on Tyreek Hill? When might we get any sort of conclusion here or finality? Or is this something that's going to linger, you think, throughout the entire summer?
It's not going to linger the entire summer. There's just really nothing right now that's been, you know, leaked out, so to speak, to update. I mean, the NFL's not moving. Tyreek Hill still suspended from any participation with the Kansas City Chiefs as he continues to be investigated for alleged child abuse. And we just sit here twiddling our thumbs. I mean, really, until there's movement from law enforcement, we may not have anything or some sort of bombshell revelation. But it's clear the Chiefs are sticking in Tyreek Hill's corner for right now. They feel that Tyreek Hill has at least been forthright and honest with them about his situation, unlike Kareem Hunt when he knocked a woman around in a Cleveland hotel room. So, and the video proved, you know, that it happened. So we're just sitting here status quo, Clay, with Tyreek Hill. Nothing to report new that I have heard.
We have the Seahawks really kind of turning the page with the retirement of a couple of their big time stars. They didn't pass physicals. How surprising was this to you with how rapidly this kind of emerged? I mean, Doug Baldwin was a pretty big playmaker for them at wide receiver last year, and he has been for effectively the entirety of Russell Wilson's career. How surprised are you by how quickly this seemed to rise up? And is this just more of what we're going to see as these NFL salaries continue to increase? It seems like the number of guys that are deciding, you know what, I'm going to hang it up while I'm still somewhat physically able, is becoming higher and higher every year.
True that, but, you know, in this case, I don't think both guys are physically able, Clay. And for Doug Baldwin, I mean, his body just, you know, as you remember the movie The Blues Brothers, one of the few movies I actually have seen in the past 30 years, ends up, the car falls apart at the end at the Cook County Assessor's Office. Well, that's essentially what happened to Doug Baldwin at the end of the 2018 season. He has undergone three off-season surgeries, and NFL Network reporting that one of those was a hernia surgery that had to do with quality of life issues after he was done playing football. In other words, he needed this surgery or else he was going to face problems post-NFL. You know, by being waived with a failed physical designation, this is a positive for Doug Baldwin in that he's able to collect $1.2 million in benefits if he never plays again for the 2019 season. The same goes for Cam Chancellor. It's, you know, due to their tenure in the NFL, so they're able to collect on that cash. So it's a nice parting gift from the Seahawks. We knew that Cam's days were pretty much done from that neck injury that sidelined him last season. The big question with him was when. As for Doug Baldwin, you know, Pete Carroll said at the rookie minicamp two weekends ago, that he was rehabbing with the team, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. But, you know, look, there's a reason that the Seahawks drafted three wide receivers, in 2019, led by DK Metcalf, who, by the way, was the star of the rookie minicamp, and they really believe that he is going to be an outstanding wide receiver for them. You know, DK's problem, well, he had a couple. He didn't play all that much at Ole Miss. He was there for 2 years, never caught more than 39 passes in a season, and while he's blazing fast and he looks like Hercules, his he had a problem at the combine play with the three-cone drill and the short shuttle. These are actually drills that matter in terms of indicating how well a guy can get out of a break. But the Seahawks have seen his footwork. They think he can really end up being able to be effective in that. They think he can learn an entire route tree as opposed to what Ole Miss had him doing, which were three specified routes, and that was it as part of a very limited playbook. So they move on now with DK Metcalf as their guy. But it is – look, it's really – the way we look at it is the end of an era, because there's only three Seahawks remaining now from that team that won Super Bowl 48. We know Russell Wilson will still be around. Can't guarantee the same for Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright in 2020. Wagner's set to become an unrestricted free agent. Wright's on a two-year deal, but he could get cut. So Russell Wilson could very well be the last man standing by the time they kick off in 2020.
That's wild. I mean, I know that we have insane turnover in the NFL, but I think for it to be possible that Russell Wilson is the only remaining Seahawk from the team that won the Super Bowl, I think there are a lot of people out there right now that are just like, my God, that's extraordinary.
Well, I mean, that's what happens with the salary cap and you know, guys who also, let's be honest here, Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, are the Seahawks moving on from these guys if they're all in on Russell Wilson? And, you know, you've read the story by Seth Wickersham at ESPN about all the dissension in the ranks in Seattle following Super Bowl 49 and the worst play call in the history of organized football, you know, second and dumb. And so, you know, the fact that Russell Wilson, you know, was really shielded from blame internally for that situation, a lot of defensive players weren't happy with that. And there was friction with Russell Wilson and, you know, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett and maybe some others. So they decided it's easier to get rid of those guys and replace them. It's easier to find a pass rushing end, or it's easier to find a corner than it is to find a top-notch quarterback like Russell Wilson. So this is Russell Wilson's team, no question about it. And they have retooled along the way. But it is drastic, Clay, no question about it. I mean, we're only about 5 or 6 years removed from Super Bowl 48 and only three guys left. I mean, that is pretty abrupt by the Seattle Seahawks, but that's also a symptom of today's NFL. Like you talked about, salary cap, younger players, and then, you know, there's a Seahawks team that is very top-heavy up top in the salary cap because of what they're paying Russell Wilson and others. They have to go with young talent if they're going to pay their big dogs.
We're talking to Alex Marvez. You can follow him on Twitter, at Alex Marvez. A lot of these rookies starting to show up for their mini camps all over the NFL. I know it's insanely early, but what are you hearing about the quarterbacks? What are you hearing about guys who could make a difference, even though, again, this hit the proverbial it's early button there, you know, in shorts and T-shirts and everything else. But this is the first time that the teams are really able to see their guys start to learn some of their system.
Okay, so here's an update on the top four quarterbacks taken. Start with Kyler Murray, who actually had bad shoes at his rookie minicamp. Yes, his cleats, apparently the right ones, Clay, did not arrive in time for him to practice. So his feet were sore at the end of practice. But fortunately, he did look the part playing under Cliff Kingsbury. This is a system custom made for Kyler Murray. And whether Cliff Kingsbury wants to hedge or not on whether Kyler Murray will be his week one starter, it would be a stunner if he wasn't that week one starter. So Kyler Murray off to a good start. Interesting comments from Mike Shula, the Giants offensive coordinator, on two fronts. Number one, look, Eli Manning is their starting quarterback. I mean, there's no question about that. But he did say that Eli reported in better physical shape to the offseason workouts than he did the previous year. Interesting, right? Wonder why that happened. And then number two, he said that he would be comfortable right now. He thinks that Daniel Jones could handle being a week one starter, that he has the mental capacity and the ability to master this playbook to be ready to play in week one if need be. Now, I'm not saying that the Giants are opening up their quarterback competition by any means, but that is something that I found interesting by Mike Shula. As for Dwayne Haskins, look, they're going to fast-track him as quickly as they can, Clay, but you get into a bit of a conundrum with Jay Gruden as head coach. Dwayne Haskins has only started for one college season. He's going to make mistakes along the way if he doesn't get a year of grooming. So are you able to tolerate a 6-8 or 6-10, 7-9, maybe 8-8 season under Dwayne Haskins? I think it's a best-case scenario. Is that going to help Jay Gruden keep his job, or do you stick with Case Keenum, just hope he doesn't screw the thing up, you run the ball, you play some defense, and you end up sneaking into the playoffs as a wild card? So that's an interesting scenario to develop there, you know, when it comes to Dwayne Haskins. As for Drew Lock, Clay, you got to be able to call plays in the huddle if you're going to play in the Denver Broncos offense. And that's where we're at with Drew Lock. Still trying to get that down. He's not used to all the verbiage that the Broncos have in their playbook. It has been said Joe Flacco will take every single first-team rep during OTAs. This is Joe Flacco's team. I mean, we could say what we want about Drew Lock and potential quarterback of the future, but the future is not now. Ain't coming anytime soon. They're going to ride or die with Joe Flacco.
What other storylines should fans be aware of out there about the NFL right now?
Well, let's follow Ndamukong Suh, right? And it's just a little bit odd that a guy who was the highest paid defensive player in NFL history when he signed his deal with the Miami Dolphins a couple of years ago still was unemployed. I mean, even after the May 7th date came for compensatory picks. And I say this, the NFL has this goofy rule that if you lose more free agents than you sign, you can pick up compensatory picks. And then there's a deadline for when you can start signing players and it won't affect your compensatory pick formula. So you see, for example, the Seattle Seahawks adding Ziggy Ansah and Jamal Taylor, the corner, after the compensatory deadline because it doesn't affect their compensatory picks that they're going to pick up in 2020. Well, you know, Ndamukong Suh is one of those types of players. His contract expired with the Rams, but no movement, nothing.
And he played pretty well down the stretch. Now, there might have been questions about how he played during the regular season, but it seemed like he really turned it on in the postseason.
Right, and he was being asked to play a new role, too. It was his first time in a 3-4. He was a nose tackle, and it was a different deal, you know, taking on a lot of double teams, and he wasn't able to penetrate as much as he was later on in the season when I think he finally became comfortable and the Rams tweaked some things. Speaking of defensive linemen, by the way, Gerald McCoy of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he says he's playing football. He just doesn't know if it's going to be with Tampa Bay, and because of the JPP situation, wrecking his Ferrari on a wet road in South Florida, apparently not going to undergo neck surgery, just going to try to let it heal on its own, but nobody has a timeline for when Jason Pierre is going to be back on the field. Thus, do the Buccaneers feel we need to have some upfront pass rush? Let's keep Gerald McCoy in his $11 million salary. Do you ultimately cut him? Is there going to be a trade partner that emerges? And if so, well, this one gets weird too, Clay, because I don't know if a team's going to take him on for $11 million in salary at this point in his career, but does he agree to a restructured contract to stay with the team? You know, does he just say, no, I'm not going to renegotiate my deal. Cut me and I'll negotiate myself in free agency. So, I mean, I feel for Gerald McCoy, a guy who's actually done everything right off the field in the Tampa area, one of the most active members when it comes to off-field benevolence, et cetera. But the Buccaneers, they're still holding on to him, and he's being held hostage in a way by the Bucs, not knowing his future, and, you know, just waiting for, you know, just for some sort of finality from Tampa Bay, knowing is he going to be with this team or not. Right now, not showing up at the offseason workout program.
What is the story with Sue? Is it that he wants more money and nobody's really willing to step up to the table? Is it that he might retire? What are you hearing about him?
You know, that's the thing. Like, it's pretty much radio silence from his camp right now. And Ndamukong Suh made a heck of a lot of money. You know what, Clay? And it's funny. You know, just you sort of almost wait for him to put on a Patriots jersey, right? Because he seems like a Patriots type of guy, the one-year mercenary who comes in, tries to win that Super Bowl at the tail end of their career, and then moves on. And it makes sense, but apparently he wants to stay on the West Coast. So, I mean, the L.A. Chargers are seemingly the perfect fit, but they haven't moved. And, Clay, their defensive tackle depth, shaky at best. And I'm being kind, I think, especially with Jerry Tillery, their first-round pick, recovering from labrum surgery in March. He may not be ready till week one, and who knows what type of rookie impact he makes. So I got to think that the Chargers, at least on paper, would be a front-runner for him. But if they're trying to lowball Sue, you know, he's a guy – I mean, Clay, he makes Clay Travis-type money, okay, with his outside investments, all right? You're talking, you know, triple-digit type guy here in terms of NFL earnings and what he's parlayed into with his friendship with Warren Buffett and his investments in real estate and other businesses. I mean, the guy is a really shrewd, you know, shrewd character off the field when it comes to his cash. He doesn't have to play, but I think he loves it. I think he'll be somewhere. Guy, by the way, you don't have to worry about him being in shape. The guy is a training maniac. He'll be just fine wherever he lands.
Outstanding stuff as always. Alex, we will talk to you next week. Appreciate you getting up early with us, and look forward to it.
Can't wait, Clay. Thank you, baby.
That's Alex Marvez. We're going to go to break here. As we prepare to go to break, just giving you a heads up, we're going to be joined by the Admiral, David Robinson, when we come back. We'll have him break down the NBA Game 7s, also what he thought of Kawhi's performance and what he thought of Kawhi and the way he exited San Antonio in general. That should be a pretty interesting conversation. Again, the Admiral, David Robinson, going to join us next.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Looking forward to hanging out with the Admiral David Robinson, who's scheduled to call us here shortly. Big discussion point, obviously, as we move into the Eastern and Western Conference Finals in the NBA is where exactly are the rooting interests going to be? Western Conference matchup between the Warriors and the Trailblazers, Eastern Conference between the Bucks and the Raptors. I asked you that. That's our poll question for the day. Over 10,000 of you have voted so far, and I'm a little bit surprised, but the Milwaukee Bucks are running away with this thing. 48% of you are saying you're rooting for the Milwaukee Bucks to win the NBA title. 22% coming in on the Portland Trailblazers, second place, but way behind in second place. And then the Warriors and the Raptors wrapping up the final bit here. The Warriors getting 16% of the vote, the Raptors getting 14%. Now, I thought the most surprising thing that happened over the course of the weekend in the NBA was not actually what took place on Sunday. Certainly it was an upset for the Portland Trailblazers to go into Denver and get the win. But it was also a pretty big upset, much bigger in my mind, for the Warriors to go on the road and win Game 6 against the Rockets. And what was interesting about the poll results here are there's a lot of people out there rooting for the Golden State Warriors to lose. Because in my audience, we polled this question. We said, who are you rooting for, the Warriors or the Rockets? Two-thirds of the people out there were rooting for the Rockets to get it done. And the Warriors still not much of a favorite here as we come into the Final Four. We are joined now by David Robinson. And, David, I want to start off with this. You did something really cool for a lot of military veteran families over the weekend, thanks to Johnsonville. What did you guys do down in the San Antonio area?
Yeah, no, good morning. Thanks for having me on. We got a chance to, you know, go to the Fort Sam base and grill up some Johnsonville sausage for them and just really thank the families. It was Military Spouse Appreciation Day. And so we got a chance to tell them how much we appreciate them. And my mom, you know, my mom and dad being a military family and my dad being gone a lot of times when I was young, I understand what the spouses mean to the stability and the strength of a family. So we got a chance to celebrate with Johnsonville and with the military service members.
You had a Hall of Fame career with the Spurs, and there are a lot of people out here listening to us right now that were big fans of yours. But the story I think that's so iconic about you is you go to the Naval Academy at 6'6", and then suddenly end up being 7 feet tall. When did you start to think for the first time that you could play in the NBA?
I'd probably say at the summer after my freshman year. I had grown a couple of inches, gained a few pounds, and got a chance to play with some USA basketball team. And it was the first time I had played against really top-level players across the country and felt like I could compete against them as I was growing. And I thought, wow, you know, this doesn't look so hard. But it did help that I kept growing.
So I'm curious on that in general, because nowadays you have 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds and even younger that are identified as college basketball and future NBA prodigies. How much different do you think your personality would have been, if at all, if you had known at 12, 13, 14 that you were headed for a career in the NBA? Would it have changed the way you carried yourself? Do you think it would have changed your personality at all?
You know, it's a tough question to answer. I think – you know, with a lot of these young guys, when you're so focused on getting there, and I think many people are pampering you and, you know, trying to put you in a position where basketball is your one and only love. I think I think that would have changed me because I enjoyed being more rounded. I enjoyed school. I enjoyed doing all the different things that I did. And if I would have felt the pressure to not stay in school for 4 years, you know, who knows what I would have done? I mean, I'm so glad I got my degree. I can't even tell you. I played for 14 years, and the things I'm doing after school are every bit as important as what I did when I was playing.
You obviously have a deep connection with the city of San Antonio. What has the city of San Antonio meant to you? What has it meant to the overall Spurs organization?
Wow. You know, really hard to put that into words. It's been an incredible relationship for me. The city has adopted me as a son, really. And we've grown up together in many respects. I think San Antonio has become more of a world stage city. And I think we've had to grow up because of that. You know, we've always been kind of in the shadow a little bit of Dallas and Houston and even Austin to a certain extent. But now I see the city really growing and, it's really a part of me. It's a part of who I am. So, you know, the Spurs have stood for excellence at a very, very high level for a long time. And I'm very proud to be associated with that.
When you look back on your career now, what do you consider the absolute apex or highlight? Or when you sit back and think about what you did on the basketball court, is it being a member of the Dream Team? Is it being? I mean, it's wild to think about all the different things you did. Is it the Olympics? Is it winning the titles in the NBA? What kind of stands out with you?
You know, I think winning the championships with the Spurs probably stands out the most, just because. You know, that's kind of your main goal. You know, you're trying to help lift this team, lift this city to a new level that it's never gone to before. And it took us 10 years. It was a crazy journey. But we achieved it. And then, you know, Dream Team, obviously being a part of, you know, what could arguably be the best team of all time. That was very, very cool. Great growing experience for me. Got a chance to, you know, meet all the guys that I didn't like from playing, you know, got to make new friends of, you know, all my Utah Jazz guys and, you know, all the guys across the league. Well, you know, they're beating you up every day. So had a blast. It was a great time. But yeah, those are probably the highlights, winning the championship and doing that. And then retiring as a champion, I think it was another incredibly high moment that I'll never forget.
What was it like being on that 92 Dream Team in terms of the celebrity status? I can't even imagine what it was like trying to move around in Europe that year while you guys are chasing the gold medal. Kind of take me into that window, into that universe of what it was like that summer.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I cannot imagine what it was like being a Beatle, but, you know, I think that was a hint of what life was like. You know, we were barricaded basically in the hotel as we got to Barcelona. We had police and you know, stone barricades outside the hotel every day at any given hour. There were thousands of people outside the hotel. Every time we went to the game, they shut down the highway. We went down the wrong side of the highway with armed gunmen all the way to the arena. It was absolutely crazy. Just a great experience. You know, I think the team kind of captured everybody's imagination.
Was there somebody on that team you mentioned kind of getting to know those guys in the 1990s era NBA that you didn't like going in that you ended up liking a lot when you were finished?
Yeah, I think most of them I didn't like going in. You know, I mean,
because you guys were so competitive back in the day, right? I mean, I think that's what people loved about the NBA, that era.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a different era. I mean, when you're competing every day and, you know, guys are trying to knock your teeth out. I mean, it's a different type of a feeling. And I think, you know, the teams were so great. You know, Utah was such a well-executing team and so disciplined. And, you know, Karl Malone's one of the biggest, strongest guys in the league. John Stockton was incredibly talented. You go across the other side, there's Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. They weren't giving anybody an inch. So, yeah, you know, when you go up against those guys, they're talking trash, they're getting in your face, and, you know, it was just a different era. I mean, nowadays everybody seems like they're the best buddies, but it wasn't like that back in the day. But, you know, when I sat down with, you know, with Carl and John Stockton, I liked those guys. I liked their families. I enjoyed them, but that was the first time I realized, you know what, they're real people. It's sort of like when you're in elementary school and you have teachers, you don't think they're real people until you see them at the grocery store.
No, it's great. Yeah. It was
a fun experience.
What would the reaction have been when you started playing in the NBA in the 90s if you had told your teammates that you were going to take a couple of games off for load management?
It wasn't really a thought back then. You know, nobody did that. You know, I think it, you know, Pop was one, you know, obviously one of the first guys. Popovich was one of the first guys that started doing that. And I think that, you know, he's smart. You know, it is a long season. It does wear you out. And there's not, well, back in the day, there wasn't a player that would ask for that time off. I mean, we all wanted to be on the floor. We all wanted to be on the floor all the time. So, you know, it's become a little bit of a different era in a lot of ways. Just different. I mean, you know, I'm not saying better or worse. It's just different. I things are going to change. I mean, I think some of the guys are every bit as talented and maybe even more talented than guys during my era. But certainly from a, you know, toughness and a competitive standpoint, I think it's hard for the guys today to really be in the same category as the guys back in our day.
We're talking to David Robinson. What did Greg Popovich mean to your career?
Wow. I mean, amazing. You know, Pop came in and had a real vision. And I think, you know, we went through a few different coaches, and we had some very, very good coaches, obviously. You know, Larry Brown is a legendary coach. And you know, along the way there, we had John Lucas, who was a ton of fun to play with and really a great motivator. You know, Bob Hill, who did a good job. But, you know, Pop really took it to that next level, brought in the discipline and the structure that that really kind of transformed us into champions. Well, obviously, Tim Duncan coming in helped as well. But yeah, you know, obviously, you watch Pop and how he's shifted and managed through a couple different generations, through kind of my era, then Tim's era, and even beyond. So, you know, Popovich has just been incredible. I mean, 24 years now? Incredible.
Kawhi Leonard hits a big shot to win Game 7. It's the first ever game winner buzzer beater in the history of the NBA in Game 7s. What's your thoughts in general on Kawhi Leonard, the way things ended in San Antonio, and are you rooting for him to win a championship in Toronto?
Well, number one, I love Kawhi as a player. I mean, he's an unbelievable. And when he was here at San Antonio, I always said, I think he's the best two-way player in the league. You know, obviously the way he left, nobody was happy with here. You know, I mean, it was just a kind of an odd situation. It felt like the perfect succession plan. You know, following Tim, and he's obviously one of the best players in the league, and it just kind of was. I don't think it felt good for anybody. I mean, he obviously said it was a tough time for him. You know, for us, it's been a transition. We're shifting into a new gear. So, you know, it wasn't what everybody envisioned, and I think that was disappointing. But, you know, I watch him now, and I root for him just as much as I did when he was in San Antonio. I mean, he's incredible. He's just a great, great player. Glad to see that he's healthy. I don't know if I'd say I root for him to win a championship. That might be a little strong. I do want him to play really well, and I want him to have a very, very successful career. But I want the Spurs to win championships. Figure out how to get there.
Outstanding stuff from David Robinson. Final segment of the show next on OutKick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back, Geico, OutKick Studios. All right. First of all, David Robinson, phenomenal. I feel like we could talk to him for a whole hour. There were so many other questions I wanted to get to him about. When I was a kid growing up, he was one of the guys that I was a huge fan of, one of my idols, now over 50 years old. But, man, I feel like legitimately we could talk to him for an hour. All the Dream Team stories, all the 1990s era, and before that, basketball stories in general. I mean, just an incredible guy who obviously has been very well connected with the San Antonio area, and he and Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan becoming icons in the universe of basketball with their long-range connections. But while we were in commercial break, legitimate, I would say pretty shocking breaking news. Let me get the breaking news sounder, and then I'm going to hit you guys with it. NBA and college basketball related. I think a lot of you are going to be like, wow, I did not see this coming, because I certainly did not either.
Breaking news from Fox Sports.
This is legit. Sometimes you got to, like, one of these news stories comes out and you're like, man, is this a made up, like, fake account? No, it's real. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting it. Michigan head basketball coach John Beilein has agreed to a 5-year deal to become the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So John Beilein, one of the most consistently successful coaches in all of college basketball, what he has done for the Michigan Wolverine basketball program, second to none, really, when you look at the amount of success he has had. He is leaving college basketball. Before that, West Virginia. I mean, just he has won everywhere he has ever been, and he is going to become the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers signing a 5-year deal. You would think that this is going to potentially set forth some shockwaves in the college basketball universe, because that Michigan job is a really good one. I don't know that anybody anticipated this happening, but again, news breaking in the last 5 minutes or so, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, Michigan's John Beilein leaving the Wolverines to become the head basketball coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. A five-year deal. Michigan now in the market to find a new basketball coach. And, man, I mean, this is one of those news stories that you just did not see. He's been in college basketball for so long. Beilein close to winning a title at Michigan, never quite able to do it. Maybe he just got tired of college basketball recruiting. Maybe he's always had a desire to coach in the NBA. But the Cleveland Cavaliers, not a very good team. It's not like they're close in any way to contending, maybe even for the playoffs or a championship, but we'll see how he translates to the NBA. Bailing on college, again, Michigan's John Beilein headed to coach the Cleveland Cavaliers as part of a five-year deal. That Michigan job will be highly, highly sought after. Will be intriguing to see which coaches will be willing to make that jump. Michigan in the coaching market, I would imagine that they are shocked as well. Beilein reportedly, according to Woj, notified Michigan's team as well as the administration that he is leaving for what has to be a big payday in Cleveland. Appreciate all of you. Thanks to David Robinson and thanks to Alex Marvez. I encourage you guys to download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning. See you on Lock It In later on TV today.